These boys better get used to pushing the pace. All this standing around ain't gonna fly when daddy comes home. Welcome to Early Stoppage, a show with the news of the day. Usually even just enough time, but sometimes not enough. If this is your first time stopping by, we thank you and get ready for something you won't find anywhere else. I'm John Franklin, and I'm joined by the God, Father of Fight Night Picks from the Canada, Craig Allen. Craig, how are you?
I'm well, John. I'm fired up. I'm looking forward to this weekend's card. I'm looking forward to all the news that's out there. It's a big time for MMA. Just before we came on live, there was a UFC press conference. The guy with the fancy hair, Jose Young's, got to ask some questions. Some friends of the show were there. Like, it looked like an overall good time. Drake Riggs made it. Good job. You know what? Golf clap. Drake Riggs. Congrats, man. SCMP MMA making moves. So you gotta real recognize real. You gotta give some shouts there. Matt and I had the chance to go on to a show today, so I'm going to talk about that a little bit later on. But yeah, that was pretty cool. It's a good time. It's just a great time, John. I'm excited.
It is a great time. All right, Craig. On this episode of Early Stoppage, we talk the return of the Outlaw, Frank Mir's boxing debut, and Paulo Costa's whining. But we begin with Khamzat Chimaev. Craig, it would seem that Khamzat Chimaev has hung them up in an IG post. Chimaev said the following: I want to say thank you all so much for supporting me in my journey in this sport. I think I'm done. Yes, I know I didn't take the belt, but it's not the most important victory in this life. It may upset you, but my heart and body tell me everything. I want to say a big thank you to my team. I want to say a big thank you to the UFC. Now, this was refuted by the head of the Chechen Republic, Ramzan Kadyrov, who says he convinced Khamzat not to retire. Errol Hawani said that he reported that Khamzat Chimaev spoke with Ramzan Kadyrov, and Kadyrov said he remains and will fight to the end in his own IG post. Craig, this is a lot to process, and it kind of came out of nowhere. Most retirements like this do. How big of a blow do you think Khamzat Chimaev retiring is to the UFC?
All right, John. So I'm gonna clear my throat like I should have before the show. I'm gonna put on my glasses. They crawled out of the woodwork and they whispered into your brain. They set you on the treadmill and they made you change your name. John, do you know what the song is?
No idea.
And it seems to me you lived your life like a candle in the wind. The kid burned out.
He did.
I mean, he flamed right up. He was like, you know what? I actually have a candle next to me in the office. I've got one of those nice woodwick candles. They're great, but they're loud as all hell. And you know what? He was kind of like a woodwick candle. They're good for about like 3 or 4 uses, and then you burn the woodwick down and the candle's gone. And it was fun because it was loud. But overall, yeah, I mean, it's pretty disappointing, right? If you're an MMA fan, you get invested in this guy. We haven't seen a meteoric rise like this since maybe Conor McGregor. Like, you try and make connections to other fighters, but who else has made such an impact in such a short amount of time? Now, the problem is, you and I talked about this last week. The UFC flew the guy out to the States to receive the best medical attention. You had to think that there are a lot of people in and around the UFC kind of shaking their heads. Like, why does he get this preferential treatment over us? Well, it seems like he's still going through a tough time. I know I listened to Morning Combat with Brian Campbell and Luke Thomas. They gave a much better account on this than I ever could because they talked about the specific steroid that Khamzat's on. It can kind of make you all crazy. So overall, I don't really think that this is going to be forever. Pretty scary stuff when you have a dictator kind of out there pushing you to stay and fight. Like, you kind of have to wonder, like, what's going on behind the scenes as far as strings that are being pulled. But I don't love that. The optics are a little weird. But I mean, hey, the UFC's kind of in business with these, I'd say this guy in Chimaev. You're in the business with this guy, but everything that comes along with him. So they're pretty invested at this point. I think if he does retire, it's a blow, but it's not the biggest blow. I mean, this guy hasn't main evented yet, but he is that next thing. So it definitely is disappointing for sure.
Yeah, I think the situation with Chimaev is interesting because I think that there's a lot of reasons why guys retire. And one reason why they retire that we don't really don't talk about all that much is sometimes you just get tired of asking the question, when are you going to be back? You just get sick of it. And I think a lot of guys retire because they know that once when you're in the UFC, you're just on that conveyor belt, right? And the conveyor belt just never stops. You go from one to the next. You're on the conveyor belt for this fight. You get off, you get put on the conveyor belt for the next fight. And a lot of guys just want some breathing room. And it's a a little bit ironic because of, I mean, I don't want in any way, guys, for this to be made into that I'm making this into a joke, but there's a little bit of irony that the kid needs breathing room to get healthy, right? Because, you know, it's a respiratory thing he's dealing with, and he's breathing room just in his life. And I think that saying you're retired stops the questions and allows you to just go off and get healthy and not have to worry about that. I think Dominic Cruz, I don't know if he ever talked about retiring when he went through all his troubles, but he just wanted to just go be able to heal. And I think that's what's happening here. So, you know, best of wishes to the kid if he comes back or he decides to stay retired. But like I said, I think he's just trying to get himself a little space.
John, I mean, let's switch gears from a guy that retired to a guy that's just down in the doldrums. And we've all been there. You just polished off a shot of Jim Beam after a liter and a half of Spumante and a dozen bacon wrap scallops the night before a wedding. No. Nobody, just me. Did I ruin a party? Did I have an awful mess after the fact? Listen, we've all been there, John. Maybe it is just me, but Paulo Costa is blaming his performance in the UFC 253 fight against Israel Adesanya on the wine from the night before. Are you taking the cheese with the wine, or what are you thinking here?
Listen, man, blame it on the goose. It got you feeling loose. Blame it on the alcohol, right? We heard that before. Listen, I've heard a couple of people say this. I don't remember who they were, so I can't quote them. I apologize. Ew. But this is what they said. It looks good or it looks bad either way. Either you performed horribly and got your ass whipped and now you're lying about it, or you're telling the truth and the night before the biggest fight of your life, you got into your cups and you were like, you know, shithoused. Before you were about to fight for the belt and everything and all that comes with it. Either way, it's a bad look. Now, the one thing I will say to the either way it's a bad look crowd, which I happen to be in, would be this. It's always in this sport, not all sports, in this sport, it's always better to at least maintain your alphaness. So it's better to have said, yeah, I got fucked up and made that mistake, than to say, no, he's just better than me. Now, the question is, are you telling yourself that or are you telling the world that? If you're telling the world that, that's fine. You can tell the world whatever you want and go about the business of getting back to it. But he knows whether Israel Adesanya whipped his ass or not. And unless he's making those adjustments, he can tell everybody everything that he wants. It's going to be the same fight if he gets back in there. Now, in fairness to him, if he gets the world to believe this excuse or whatever line of logic, then he helps his case to get back in there with Adesanya. So I can understand why he's doing it from that perspective.
Now, I mean, I'll quote my favorite fighter of all time. Seems like Vegas got the better of you. Now, the fight wasn't in Vegas, and I just wanted to talk like George St. Pierre for a second. But for me, was it the nerves? Is that why he did it? Did he actually do it? I mean, we haven't really heard anything out of his camp. Is this guy still being a memer, but in real life? Like, people really like him over on the social media, and credit where credit's due. English isn't his first language. If it's him or if it's somebody else managing his Twitter, somebody's doing a pretty good job of it. But, I mean, I don't buy that he was boozing. I mean, he just had a poor performance. I think he's just trying to lay blame on something else. And if it wasn't the booze, then maybe you blame it on the spuds, or maybe you blame it on something else. I mean, it could have been anything, but... Yeah, it's a shame that you kind of go this route. I don't know if it diminishes Paulo Costa anymore, because he's still going to have a tough fight ahead of him. Who's he going to fight? Like, name anybody out of the top 10. I mean, everybody's great out there. So the next fight's not an easy one for him. I'm sure he's going to bounce back. Maybe it'll take him a fight. Maybe it'll take him two. But it's not a good look. It's funny, but it's still not a good look.
I agree. We move on, Craig, this week straight from a couple of sources. Highly sources, the sources being one half of those fights, potentially. Dustin Poirier said, oh, we got a little bit of news that broke. Dustin Poirier said that he's expecting to fight Conor McGregor for the third time in the summer. And Jorge Masvidal is alluding to the fact that he and Kamaru Usman are hooking it up for a second time in August or September. Craig, we've seen these guys fight four times. Well, three times. And neither of these fights were close. The second fight between Conor and Poirier and the first fight between Usman and Masvidal. Is this the best these divisions can do? Is it a money play? What's going on here?
So, I mean, I look at all the fights that we have coming up. Like, let's pick an odd welterweight fight that might have some implications in the division. You have Vicente Luque, Tyron Woodley. What floats your boat more? Vicente Luque, Tyron Woodley, or Kamaru Usman, Jorge Masvidal too? I'll take Luque Woodley. Even a shot Woodley, I'll still take it. Let's take lightweight. What do we have? Nazareth Hackpress is fighting Don Madge. John, what do I care about more? Conor McGregor, Dustin Poirier 3, or Don Madge, Nazareth Hackpress? If you're playing along at home, South Africa versus Germany / Afghanistan, I'm taking Madge and I'm taking Nazareth Hackpress. John, if we could put this all and wrap it up with a bow, I'm going to go with, a classic Iconopop summer hit. John, do you remember Iconopop?
No.
I don't care. But I don't love it. I don't love it. This is stupid. Why are we even bothering with this crap? I mean, you look at the second fight between Conor and Poirier. You're right. It wasn't close. Conor wants to cash those CHEQUES. Now, I know you guys down in the States, regardless, you spell check. Like, if I was to sign a check, you guys spell it like total morons. Isn't it CHECK?
Yes.
Yeah, it's spelled with a Q and a U and an E. And I get it. Conor was trying to be cute about it. And half the people in the States probably had no idea what he was talking about. But for me, I don't need to see it. The Masvidal fight wasn't close the first time. It's not going to be close the second time. I don't need this in my life.
Yeah, so here's the problem with Craig Allen, folks. Craig Allen suffers from what I like to call hardcore disease, meaning he is always going to go for the bigger fight, or the better fight, over the fight, the bigger fight. He's always going to go for the fight that, rightfully so, and good for him. You know, he breaks these fights down in a way that I never will. And he's looking to see good fights, and I get that. Craig Allen does not represent 87% of UFC fans. They want to see fights. They want to see big fights. They want to see cool posters. They want to see all that. So they don't even know who Don Madge is, Craig, most of these guys. So I barely know who Don Madge is. So
I've got a squiggle right behind me. He's up on that poster somewhere. I don't know where he is, but he's there.
As well he should be. But here's the deal. Obviously, my question, which you completely alluded, or you completely disregarded and dismissed.
Yep.
Was, is this the best that these divisions can do in terms of a title fight? Not in terms of a fight. Is this the best? I mean, who's better to match up Usman and Poirier with, if not these guys?
Thompson at welterweight and Charlie Olives at lightweight. Those are just two off the top of my head. I know Oliveira for sure at lightweight. At welterweight, you can make the case. Maybe Leon Edwards needs another win. Maybe you throw him in there. I know, again, he has a fight against Bilal Muhammad. Maybe match those guys up. I don't know. But there's better options out there than Masvidal. John, have you ever listened to Stompin' Tom Connors before?
I want to say who hasn't, but I haven't.
So originally from St. John, New Brunswick, Canada, he settled into Prince Edward Island. He's got songs like the hockey song, Margo's Got the Car, Goodbye, and Reggie's Got the Rig. That's a good song. But his best song, or his best known song, is probably Bud the Spud. And I'm going to go out on a limb here and say you've never heard it, but it's Bud the Spud from the Bright Red Mud. Rolling down the highway, smiling. The spuds are big on the back of Bud's rig. They're from Prince Edward Island. They're from Prince Edward Island. And John, Otmanizzites are, I don't know if he's ever been to Prince Edward Island. I don't know if he's ever been to Idaho, but the kid's all about that bag. And according to Ali Abdelaziz, John, he's about that bag of potatoes. So I don't know if he's a Stompin' Tom fan. I don't even know what the question is here, because the UFC kicked this guy out, but then he wasn't ever really kicked out. And they didn't even give him a slap on the wrist. And his brother tested positive for a banned substance. And now he's got a fight coming up against Marc-Andre Barrio from Canada, who tested positive for a banned substance. These brothers are nothing but trouble. But here's my real question. Why do you even bother with this guy or these two brothers at this point? Like, what's the whole point here?
Well, I don't know anything about their background. Ali Abdelaziz.
Murky.
Okay, then that's why you bother. Because if their backgrounds are murky and, you know, I listen, there is a whole, and I don't know that we're ever going to see this, and we're damn sure not going to do it. This is something for, you know, our Karim Zidane to do. Not me. But there's a lot going on in some circles in MMA. And Ali is is affiliated with it. You know, a lot of the Ali fighters seem to end up at these seminars or engagements with guys who are not on the right side of the law over the water. So these guys might be in with that as well. So I'm sure there's a couple of times when a phone gets picked up and Ali's called to straighten out some messes. This might be that's the best I can do for you, is that if nothing adds up, typically something's, you know, not stirring in the Kool-Aid.
So this donkey had a fight booked against Matt Frivola. I had a Zaitsev to win because he's a good boxer. He can knock people out, you know, so on and so forth. And his brother is pretty good too. But I do not understand the point. You know, we could go off and try to speculate. I just don't get it. You know, if you're going to come out with this hard of a stance on that night, listen, the kid's gone. Because that's how Dana White would say it, right? The kid's gone. The kid's out of here. We didn't need him. He didn't mean good business. A guy went through 4 balconies and went Mission Impossible on this. It wasn't for potatoes. And I know Ali said it all with a straight face, but it wasn't for potatoes. Unless they were from Idaho or PEI. I don't get the point anymore. It upsets me tremendously, and I'll leave it at that.
it doesn't upset me in the least bit, and I'll still leave it at that because of who it's connected to.
You know what does upset me? That you don't know Stompin' Tom Connors. Like, if you like, you know, folksy old music that's not even that old, Stompin' Tom's your guy.
Here's what I'll tell you that I think is unfortunate in on our show and in our relationship. You have done a lot of legwork, not involving me necessarily, but just in general, in acclimating yourself to American culture. And I've done none in acclimating myself to Canadian culture. So from now on, here's my promise that I'll make to you that I'll probably break. But here's my promise that I'll make. From now on, when you recommend something that is even Canada adjacent, which the States is Canada adjacent, but that's another story. Anything that's Canada adjacent, I'm committing to at least trying it out. I will not spell checks with a Q, though. Moving on, Craig, last week we talked about how great the UFC's heavyweight division is. And this week we saw the collateral damage of a division with such health and long-term prospects. The fat is getting trimmed, my friend. The fat this time was former heavyweight champion Junior Dos Santos and former interim champion, I believe, Alistair Overeem, who were both cut by the promotion. Craig, first, do you agree with these cuts? And secondly, what's next for these fighters?
I mean, I get it, right? Like, you're on a losing streak. You get paid a lot of money. They cut Yoel Romero already. So it was only a matter of time. I look at the division, you know, I have issues with where people are ranked. I threw a tweet out there, you know, Sergey Pavlovich is ranked 11th. He's only won 2 fights in the UFC. They're against really low competition. Shamil Durakhimov hasn't won a fight in a few years. He's ranked 7th. He just moved up in the rankings here recently, but that's because of those 2 cuts. And then I look at some of the real positives. Chris Daukaus ranked 9th. Tom Aspinall ranked 14th. You've got, again, Pavlovich, young enough guy. Augusto Sakai, 8. You have Ciryl Gane, 4. Rozenstruik, 6. You've got some new blood. So, listen, I get it. You know, they continue to expand on the roster. Just thank your lucky stars that this isn't the women's featherweight division, where we have a title fight that means nothing coming up this weekend. And get excited about some of these prospects that the UFC's at least signed, brought in, and started to kind of showcase. You know, you look at Aspinall's win over Arlovski. That's a big deal. You look at Chris Daukaus beating Alexei Olenek, and you might think, well, that's not as big of a deal, but it was a very impressive win. So I know you're really excited about this division. I know Matt's really excited about it. We talked about it at length, but it's a sad time to see these guys go. I mean, I have a good friend, Mike. Mike, if you're out there listening, hey, Mike. But he is Junior Dos Santos' biggest fan. He's been a GDS fan since Jump Street. And I know how disappointed he was at JDS getting released, but I've also been on the train with Mike where there was a USADA suspension. JDS is getting knocked out. Like, he just keeps getting knocked out. So you finally have to kind of cut your losses. This was the time to do it. So it's unfortunate, but it probably had to happen.
Interesting John Franklin, Junior Dos Santos story. One time I was in the food court at MGM and JDS was eating there by himself. And I looked over at him. And he was eating. He just had a look on his face. I said, listen, man, you look like a guy who doesn't want to deal with a fan right now, so I'm just going to let you eat. And he just smiled. He said, thanks, brother. I said, I'll save a picture for another day. And so anyway, he was a cool guy, and I let him be. But you know, this is interesting because these guys, we once we start to get this show properly archived, we'll be going back to some stuff we said in the past. We had this conversation, Craig, seems like a month, maybe more ago, where if you got a big number and the division looks good, it's, you know, you start smelling like Scott Coker's cologne, and it's Cokerville time. You're taking the next train to Cokerville. I think that this is what these guys are looking at. So I guess the next question I'm going to pose to you is, when you smell these guys, if you were to walk up and take a sniff of them, do they smell like Bellator or do they smell like PFL?
So JDS...
Do they smell like a Triller fight?
JDS seems like a Bellator guy. Overeem doesn't seem like a Bellator guy. Overeem barely seems like a PFL guy. To me, Overeem seems like a KSW guy. Because you can match up Alistair Overeem with, like, I don't know, Pulpec Monster or Erko Yoon or Damian Gabrowski, or like, you could just make up some of these fun fights for him that he'd probably win. Like, you could have Alistair Overeem tomorrow fight Phil DeFreeze, and it would draw eyes, and he'd probably get paid quite well for it too. So for me, I see it like a PFL or a Ryzen. You'd probably see like a goodbye farewell show in Japan with Overeem. I think that would make sense, but not Bellator, not PFL.
You know, it's interesting. I couldn't even tell you with a gun to my head how to even watch KSW. That's how uninterested I am in KSW. If Phil DeFreeze fought Alistair Overeem, I'm watching that fight 1,000%.
Okay.
So the point you made is a good one in that. Now here's the thing with JDS. I said it jokingly, but I mean it. JDS has Triller written all over him, dude. I mean, I would really like to see JDS get in there let me tell you, and we'll get to this later.
Mike Tyson.
I'd much rather see JDS fight Antonio Tarver than Frank Mir. 100%. So I think that is, I don't know if he has a big enough name, but does Frank Mir really? I mean, I don't know. If you were to give me, if we were to take a guess as to who has a higher Q rating, I'm going to do this as an ongoing thing, and you can move on to the next segment. Who do you think has more followers on social media, Frank Mir or Junior Dos Santos?
JDS, because it was later.
Okay, you go, and go to the next. I'll get back to you.
All right, John, while you do that, make sure you wipe off the dust on your Affliction merch, because Dan Hardy's been itching for a fight with Matt Brown, but Matt Brown drew Diego Lima this week, so the Outlaw called out, in his words, Nicholas Diaz. John, do you think this is a safe fight for all involved, and do you think the UFC is going to bite? Because we heard from Diaz's manager the tail end of last year, he was going to take a fight at the start of 2021. Not even a peep out of that camp anymore. And then for Dan Hardy, he said, with any promotion, anywhere, what have you, is it the UFC and will it happen?
Yeah. So in terms of the safety aspect, and really quickly, Frank Mir has 300,000 followers on Twitter. Junior Santos has 1.3 million. So you were right. Junior Santos got into the game a little later than Frank Mir did. And that's kind of probably where that's coming from. But either way, the numbers speak for themselves. Moving back to this situation, 100% Nick Diaz has more followers than Dan Hardy does. Even though Hardy sort of had this second act as an analyst, you know, for a minute, I was thinking, I don't need to see Dan Hardy. If he's had something that kept him out of the cage this long, it was that serious that he shouldn't have been in. But you know what? It's his life. If he's cleared to do it and he thinks... I'll answer the question simply. The safety is his and the UFC's business. Am I interested in the fight? 1,000%. Here's my question for you. If they fought, how far up on the card are they if it's a pay-per-view? Because you're wasting your time to main event these guys on a fight night.
First or second fight on a pay-per-view card. Sorry.
You mean the main card?
Yeah. Yeah, I think they're going to make you pay for it. I mean, to me, it's kind of like the song My Life by Billy Joel. Go ahead with your own life. Leave me alone. Like, I look at Dan Hardy as a guy that, you're right, like, he had the heart condition. He had to be away from the game for a while. He's been cleared. What's a safe fight? Well, to me, it would have been the Matt Brown fight, but apparently the UFC decided that they move forward with Diego Lima. Like, Diego Lima? Who sells that fight? It's not Diego. Like, Douglas sells that fight.
Yeah.
The fact that Douglas is even wearing... The fact that Douglas walks into that with a UFC shirt that says Lima on it draws more eyeballs than Diego getting his ass whipped by Matt Brown. So, I don't know why they even made that fight, but Hardy Brown makes a lot of sense. Hardy Diaz? Why?
Well, let me ask you this. Because a lot of times our not friend of the show, maybe someday friend of the show, Bill Simmons, is a guy who I guess says this a lot when it comes to to NBA trades and stuff like that. Who says no? Dan Hardy, Nick Diaz. Which camp says no?
Diaz.
Yeah, I think so too. And that's going to be the hard part. Opponent. That's going to be the hard part. Diaz is in a weird situation where he hasn't earned the fights he wants, and he doesn't want to take the fights he should be taking. Because in all reality, I mean, Dan Hardy and Nick Diaz isn't that bad of a fight in terms of where they're at in their lives and their careers and all that. But, you know, Nick Diaz, I don't think would touch this fight at all. I mean, I think Dan Hardy would really have to kick up the promotional part of this. He'd have to start, like, really talking some cash shit to get this done. All right, Craig.
Let's hear from you, full reptile.
Let's move on to sparring sessions. Craig, this week, Dominic Cruz is back in the octagon. And on the prelims, it's actually not that bad of a fight, despite its location on the card. So with Cruz being on the prelims, the question is, do you think 10, 20 years from now, when we look back at Dominic Cruz's body of work and his whole entire journey, do you think his legacy will age well? Or do you think his legacy will age poorly? And let me ask you a sort of an amendment or an add-on question to this, which is, do you think that one of the things we don't do a really effective job of when it comes to mixed martial arts is talking about guys who are pioneers, even though we put them in the UFC, like, what did this person do? And what was his – one thing that you and I need to start doing more, and maybe this is a revisionist history, a revisionist MMA thing, is establishing trees, right? Like the Bill Parcells tree is like Tom Coughlin and Bill Belichick. So now this is turning into a whole different segment, but – do you think that Dominic Cruz's legacy will age well, and who do you think is on his tree of influence?
As long as he doesn't go the BJ Penn route, because who's the best lightweight of all time? Who is it? Is it Benson Henderson? Is it Frankie Edgar? Is it BJ Penn? Is it Jens Pulver? Like, who's the best lightweight of all time? You know, we've had this conversation before. Is it McGregor? Is it Nurmagomedov? Like, obviously
took you a minute to get to Nurmagomedov, by the way.
But again, well, I'm thinking back. I'm chronologically, not thinking forward.
I got you.
So I look at Dominic Cruz, and the weird thing, like when I was doing my research, so I've got my notes in front of me from this week. He fought twice in 2011 with the UFC, once in 2014, three times in 2016, once in 2020, and he'll fight once in 2021. Is he a UFC guy or is he a WEC guy? I think of him more as a WEC guy.
Yeah, I think he had some big fights in the UFC, but obviously he's more known for the WEC. Well, I don't know if he's more known for the WEC. He had a better resume in the WEC. I think Cody Garbrandt did a lot to really diminish his legacy. So, fight with Garbrandt was a mess.
You're right, and you want to talk about the tree. I would think Garbrandt, probably one of those guys. Gavin Tucker is another one of those guys. If you want to go back to a Sam Cecilia fight with the footwork and the dancing and... there's a lot of different people who've modeled their styles in part with Dominic Cruz because, again, he's a pioneer. This is the tricky thing, though, John. Like, when he went to fight Cejudo, my go-to thing was, this is the greatest bantamweight of all time in Dominic Cruz. And then he goes out there, and he didn't look all that good against Henry Cejudo. So I go into the Casey Kenny one, and he's on the prelims, and I have to say, again, this is the best bantamweight of all time. And now I feel like I have to convince people that, no, believe me, this is the best bantamweight of all time. He is. I mean, you look at the quality of wins. He is the best bantamweight of all time. But now you have to start to convince people. And then if he loses to Casey Kenny, well, then that's three losses in a row. It leaves a bad taste in people's mouths. And as the sport evolves, people are going to forget how good Dominic Cruz was based on his final track record. Now, maybe he takes another fight and then he wins, or he tries to do the Brad Pickett thing and he loses. Like, I don't know what the scoop is with Dominic Cruz personally. But I think if he loses this fight, it makes things a little murky.
I think if he loses this fight, he needs to start caring about his own legacy. And I think that some guys know when the time is to walk away. And some guys don't. And I think, like, you know, GSP is always the example of, you know, he knew to walk away when he walked away, and then he knew when to come back when he came back. So I think that, you know, certain people, like even Michael Bisping would be an example, right? We think of Michael Bisping as a guy who, towards the end of his career, beat Anderson, won the belt, knocked out Rockhold. Like, that's our memory of him, even though he lost the GSP. And that's some guys just know when the right time to leave the party is, and some guys don't. Hopefully for Cruz, I think if he wins this fight, the tricky part is, like you said, when you call him the best bantamweight in the world, and then Casey Kenney beat him, or when you call him the best bantamweight in history, he's not the best bantamweight in the world. When you call him the best bantamweight in history, and Casey Kenney beats him, then the narrative is Casey Kenney just beat the best bantamweight in history. And that doesn't sit well with people, and it shouldn't. But that's not the best bantamweight in history, Craig, isn't the guy that's stepping into the cage on Saturday. And it's one of these things I've talked about for a long time. I've been saying this exact quote in podcasts for a really long time. Are we going to get the Dominic Cruz of old, or just an old Dominic Cruz? And this is how legacies get diminished.
John Franklin, diminishing legacies. All right, John, let's move into our over-under segment, giving you some props, some ideas for UFC 259. You've got three title fights coming up. So with three title fights, Jan's taking on Sterling, Nunes is taking on Anderson, and then in the main event, you have Jan Blachowicz defending his belt for the first time against Israel Adesanya. If I set the over-under at 1.5, titles changing hands, are you going with the over or are you going with the under?
Oh, this is tough, man. There's part of me that wants to really get on Anderson, like that she just has some kind of rabbit she's going to pull out of her hat. Yeah, I know it sounds weird. There's something about it. It's kind of like it's got home Rousey vibes to me, even though matchup-wise it's horrible. I could see a scenario where Aljo wins, and I'm pretty certain Adesanya's going to win. So, you know, I'm going to go over. Because I think Adesanya's going to win, and I feel really good about Aljo. I'm going to go over. What do you think?
I'm going to go under. I think Israel's going to win. I think Megan Anderson doesn't stand a snowball's chance in hell. I really don't think that she has an opportunity in this fight. I know, you know, I played it cute when we made the predictions, and I said I did the Bambi quote at the start, and if you're not going to say anything nice, say nothing at all. So I focused on not shredding Megan Anderson. I was on the Line Sniper show today. Matt and I were with Dan and Manpreet and the guys there. And, you know, they kind of talked about it. Like, if Megan Anderson, how many opportunities out of 100 do you think she'd win if she fought Amanda Nunes? And the consensus was like maybe one and a half. I said two or three out of 100. Like, this could be the one, but I just don't have it for her. And I think Jan's going to win, but that fight's really close. That's a really tough one.
You know, it's weird. Sometimes you get, and I will completely tell you where this line of thinking comes from. And I don't want to take up all the time for the segment on this one issue, but I heard Matt Serra say something, and he said, and now sometimes when you hear something, you project it to someone else. Like if Megan Anderson heard this, wow. But Matt Serra said when he beat George St. Pierre, he made the decision that someone was getting knocked out tonight, and he was comfortable with it being him or George. But he said, I'm not going to play it safe. I'm going in there to knock him out or get knocked out. And I think if Megan Anderson does that, the higher likelihood is that she's going to get knocked out. But that's the approach. Do you know what I'm saying? You got to go in there just saying, let's get after it.
To me, the only thing that I like to hear Matt Serra say is, come on, Marab! But if we're focusing 259, knockdowns in the main event, Jan and Israel at 1.5. Do you think we're going to have more or less knockdowns in that main event?
More, because I'm picking Adesanya. I think if Jan knocks down Izzy, he's knocking him out. I think Izzy could knock Jan down a couple times and Jan not be out. So I'm going to go with I'm going to take the over.
Yeah, I'll take the over too. I think that's a fair one. You make a good point. The amount of John Jones tweets on screen at 0.5. I mean, Is he going to fight the winner? Is he going to tweet about it? What are we going to get?
I'm over heavy here on this. Give me some props. I'm taking the over here too. I think he's going to, it depends on how many times he tweets and if they're good. So I'm going to take the over, thinking that he's going to have one good one that throws shade. Here's the problem. John Jones likes to throw shade in his tweets, and I don't know that's something they put on screen. But I'm taking the over.
And he cusses a little bit, too, so that's a problem. You can't have the cuss words there.
Can't.
Retirement bouts set at 1.5. How many fighters are we going to see for the last time in the Octagon this weekend?
Who are you thinking? Who's on the list? Cruz, for sure.
Good question. So Amanda Nunes, Megan Anderson, they're making a big play on the fact that Amanda Nunes has a family. Could this be the last one? Nobody's really talking about that. Thiago Santos, if he loses to Rakic, he's 37. Dominic Cruz taking on Casey Kenny. The other one for me, Joseph Benavidez, Askar Askarov. I mean, I know Joe B, like the idea is I go out on a win, but it doesn't get easier from that. And then, you know, you've got some other good fighters, but with a loss, I mean, what does Tim Elliott do if he loses?
Yeah, I'm going to take the over because you talked me into Nunes. I really think this is a good place for her to do the I'm probably going to come back, but I'm saying that I'm retiring because, you know, 35 is looking fairly cleaned out. Obviously, 45 is never dirty. It's never unclean. That division stays cleaned out. So I would say I'm going to take the over on that one, too.
Yeah, I'll go over because I get Kenny to win and I've got Askarov to win. I'll go over unless Benavidez fights Cruz next. I don't know. How many Uriah Faber mentions are we going to get? I set this one at 3.5. How many times are we going to hear about Uriah Faber? Now, I'll let you answer this and then I'll follow it up.
Well, you know, you'd think with this one, I would definitely say over because everything else has been over because you have Cruz fighting and you have Jan fighting. So from those perspectives, both of those guys have fought Uriah Faber. So it seems like an over. I'm taking an under.
I'll take the over because he also trains Song Yadong at a team.
Oh, damn it.
So I'll take the over. Promos for next weekend's Edwards Muhammad card at 1.5. We're going to get over or under?
Oh, that's a tough one. I'm going to take an over, or no, I'm taking under because I think that they're going to do just one.
I think they're just going to do one. Normally they do one on the main card and that's pretty much it. So I'm going to go with one. Maybe they do like the card teaser. Sometimes they add fights, but usually that's for cards after. I'll go with the one as well. Finishes set at 4.5. How many finishes are we going to get on this card? And there's 15 fights on this card.
We got one last time out, so we're not doing well, but obviously that's not the level of fighter we have here. Let me see. Adesanya and Blachowicz will be one. Nunes Anderson will be one. I'm going with Jan Sterling going the distance. Makhachev Dober will have one.
Ooh. Santos Rakic is one.
Yeah, I'll take the over. I'm seeing a lot here. I think maybe Carl France might get one.
I'll take the over. I'll go top down. So I got Blachowicz, Nunes, Rakic, Ulberg, and Zechiku. That's one. So I'm at what, four? And then Medich Cruz is probably one. And Jones Bautista could be one too. So yeah, I mean, a lot of overs. I'm not good at setting these. That's kind of the name of the game, but I have fun with them. I have fun.
We do. All right, let's move on, Craig, to For the Gram this week. Cody Garbrandt was kicked off a plane for his son not wearing a mask. He chased down the flight attendant who went in the bathroom to avoid him. Craig, in light of Cody Garbrandt's COVID battles that are much discussed, it's kept him out of very, very high-profile fights. This is, at the very least, a bad look for him. What's going on with this guy?
I saw a still. I didn't see the video. Did he videotape this or did somebody else videotape it?
I think he videoed it. He videoed himself. Why? chasing after this guy. Probably because he wanted to confront him and get him on.
Like, yeah. Is that a good look?
No, it's not.
Okay, there's my answer. I'm sorry to make it short, but like I just...
Well, since you made it short, let's transition. Do you think that... I don't think this type of thing is the end of Cody Garbrandt's career in the sense that... Well, no. It's obviously not a big enough thing. But is it a peek into what could be the end of Cody Garbrandt's career, which is just this disconnection from, you know, I mean, Mike Perry's still getting fights, and he's the he's as disconnected from reality as anybody I've ever seen. Do you think this is a peek into who Cody Garbrandt is and why his career might be moving forward problematically? Or do you think that he can overcome all this and still be a champion?
Well, I mean, you're talking about a guy that would end up becoming a champion that sat on national television on a pay-per-view that he never had to chase pussy in his life. So I think if that didn't crush him, then this probably won't either. It's just, this is more unfortunate than that was.
I agree. All right, let's move on to one Twitter hitter. Our old friends, Craig, are back at it. John Jones and Daniel Cormier are up to their old tricks. Cormier said on his podcast with Ariel Helwani that John Jones can't knock out light heavyweights now, so he damn sure ain't gonna be knocking out heavyweights. John Jones responded with a video edit of him knocking DC out. So, Craig, the question is, who's right here, DC or Jones? None of this is right when these two guys argue. But do you think Jones has it in him to knock out heavyweights?
Well, yeah. Yeah, 100% he does. Especially 250 pounds, which was really a focus of one of our prior episodes of Early Stoppage. So if you missed that, go back and check it out. But yeah, I think John Jones can knock out heavyweights. I think John Jones also knocked out Daniel Cormier. So that's true as well, right? If we're talking as to what's true and what's not. Why is Cormier still talking about this with Ariel Helwani? Why would they even bring that up as a topic conversation to try and get those creative juices flowing, to try and get DC like amped up? It's silly.
I'll say this. You know, there's the old saying of like, I can't remember who it was. Might've been Anderson Silva, but I've heard this about other people. You know, the art of the eight limbs, right? Who's got the eight limbs? John Jones has the eight limbs, right? He can hit you with the elbows, the knees, the feet, the hands. So if DC's saying that, you know, John Jones isn't going to walk in there and one hit quit somebody with a right hand, he could be right. But so, John Jones has knocked out a lot of guys in a lot of different ways. So I think that John Jones is capable of knocking out Francis Ngannou, Alistair Overeem, the Incredible Hulk, anybody with a knee, a foot, an elbow. No, is a straight right cross by John Jones going to knock somebody out? Probably not. But he's got a lot of different ways to knock guys out.
Fair enough.
All right, Craig, let's move on to posting to the book. Our friends at MMA Junkie are going to help us out with this one because I'm just going to read you the straight report. Announcement that came as a surprise to many. Frank Mir, a former UFC heavyweight champion, has been booked to fight former WBA, WBC, IBF, and IBO champion Antonio Tarver in a 10-round boxing match under the Triller Fight Club banner on April 17th. Mir, who has signed with Bare Knuckle, was preparing for a debut in that organization, said that this fight was simply too much for him to resist. Is it too much for you to resist, Craig?
So I've got like all these weird fighters that, like, if you know me, and you have to know me to know this kind of stuff. So Carlos Ahlberg's fighting Kenny Inzekchukwu this week, right? And so I did all the tape study, and I'm starting to watch Carlos Ahlberg kickboxing fights, and he fought one of my guys, the Honey Bear, Jake Hune. I get excited for that stuff, John. One of my other guys is Javi Ayala with Bellator, and he's always one of my guys. It's must-see TV when Javi fights. He stocks shelves at a Walmart in California. I had him on with Fight Night Picks before. He's nicest guy in the entire world. And then he goes in there and fights Frank Mir and gets a TKO win. Did you watch that fight, John?
No.
Javi's one of my guys because he punched out the piece of bone in your mouth that holds your teeth in. He punched that out of Frank Mir. It was absolutely disgusting. I don't want to see Frank Mir fight again. He fought Roy Nelson over with Bellator. It was awful. He fought Javi. It was bad. Like, Frank Mir with Bellator was terrible, and that was a few years ago. I don't need to see him fight the guy that fought Rocky in the movie Rocky Balboa in, what, 2006? Is that when that came out?
Yeah. You know, the irony of this fight is that Frank Mir kind of looks like Rocky Balboa.
Now?
Yeah. He looks like like the Rocky Balboa that fought Antonio Tarver.
Like, if I can be 100% serious and honest, I really respect Frank Mir. I think he's a very good commentator. I don't want to make light of this. To me, it's kind of a shame to see him fight like with Bare Knuckle, or want to fight with Bare Knuckle, want to fight for Triller. Like, I guess it's, you know, it's kind of low risk if you have the big boxing gloves on and you're fighting a guy that's probably just going to shuffle around, and they'll probably end up having a fight like Tyson did with Jones, less, you know, similar to the Paul fight against Nate Robinson. But I don't want to see it. I really don't.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that, you know, Frank Mir has a lot of stuff on his plate right now. I mean, his daughter Bella is looking like she could be the next big thing in women's fighting. So, I mean, I wish that he put a little bit more energy and effort into that. Listen, for all we know, this might be – these two things might have something to do with each other. Frank Mir, who I'm sure is not struggling, he's had a lot of huge fights, maybe just said, you know, for me to more effectively – manage Bella's career, this fight with Tarver makes that easier. It just comes down to interest level. I have to admit, I'm one of those guys that when you show me Frank Mir and Antonio Tarver, I'm probably going to watch it. All right, Craig, let's move on to start the conversation. This is kind of a big one, and we always tread lightly when it comes to stuff like this, but I'm wondering your thoughts on this. UFC, we missed it last week, which is why we're bringing it back. We missed the Mir Tarver thing, which is why we're bringing it back. UFC used Michael Chandler as their person to celebrate Black History Month a couple weeks ago. It was resoundingly roasted as a horrible idea on Twitter by, you know, the people that you would expect to roast it, Andreas Hale, people that are that have a leg to stand on when it comes to this stuff. They cleaned up a week later with Maurice Smith. But the question I have for you is, do you think this is tone deaf on the UFC's part to have Chandler and his son, who is African-American, on this celebration of Black History Month? Do you think it's just flat tone deaf, or do you think it's more telling of maybe a larger issue?
It's probably a little bit of both. And I know, you know, I'm definitely not the person to really speak on it because, I mean, you know, I definitely don't have the same experiences as a lot of people out there. Just based on where I came from or where I live now, my whole entire upbringing, to me, watching this play out on the internet, it seemed, a little tone deaf. And then it's like, well, why Michael Chandler? Like, are you trying to one up him with fans? Cause he just had a big win with the UFC. Like, are there kind of some more ulterior motives at play here? Listen, it was great that they had Maurice Smith on there. And then I started to think, you know, there's so many fighters that they could have used. They could have gone with a couple of Canadians, right? I mean, here, I've got, I set up my studio a little bit differently, but my Canadian flag, why wouldn't you have gone with like Carlos Newton, or why didn't you go with like Gary Goodrich, or like there's so many other people that you could have chosen. Why did you go with Michael Chandler? And, you know, okay, you went with Michael Chandler, but why don't you just focus the whole thing on his son then and not about Michael Chandler? Like it didn't make a lot of sense to me. And it was, you know, a really important moment that they absolutely not only wasted, but the platform that was there could have been used for so many different things. So to me, it was really unfortunate to see it play out that way. Again, they tried to right the wrong by putting Maurice Smith on there. You saw more of a positive message, or at least I did on social media when Maurice Smith was featured. But there's so many other things they could have done. Like, again, you want another Canadian in combat sports, John? Here you go. If you watch Sportsnet up here, they would play Black History Month commercials and they would have different athletes. Well, the athlete that they had in this one commercial, and I watched it and I thought, like, wow, that was really cool. I actually tweeted about it. Was they had Lennox Lewis in a commercial and everything he had done for Canada and England and just so many different people too. So, you know, if Sportsnet can get it right in Canada, then why can't the UFC get it right? And why Michael Chandler? It's just, it really kind of weirded me out. It made me feel weird after.
Well, here's the thing. You got to be careful with this stuff because what ends up happening is you're not doing Black History Month any favors and you're not doing Michael Chandler any favors. And I think what really becomes a thing is you're sitting around the office and you're saying to yourself, how can we raise Michael Chandler's profile? We want to have this guy fight in big fights. How do we raise his profile? How are the different ways that we can get this guy? What excuses do we have to get this guy onto our pay-per-views or our events so people can see his face more? Well, and then someone stands up in the room and says, Dana, I have an idea. His son's black, and it's Black History Month. And there's no one in that room that either feels comfortable or exists to say that is a horrible idea. Black people are going to hate it, and so will everyone else probably. And they're gonna pin that to Michael Chandler. Like, that's going to be Michael Chandler now. He's going to seem like that he should have known better than to participate in that. Because honestly, the thing that I saw in all this on Twitter the whole night was, this is a white savior story. So now you're doing the exact opposite of Black History Month. You're propelling forward a quote-unquote white savior in Michael Chandler. So for me, it just doesn't sit well with me. I think you nailed it when you said that, it's just a bad look.
And you couple this, and listen, the question was thrown down there a day ago. That's why I remembered it. It was out of the recap show. And I won't read, it's you know, a number of paragraphs, but it's from Gaz Bach. I'm interested in a follow-up to the John Jones Vegas story and John and the Allen brothers' thoughts on the UFC's relationship with black fighters. And it's more about how the UFC's, you know, kind of unfairly treated some of their fighters, some of the performances, namely Leon Edwards, Tyron Woodley. You know, is it low finish rates? Is it the way that these fighters are fighting? To me, it's a problem. Like, it's a big problem. And, you know, for us to talk about it, that's one thing, but the UFC's really got to step up to the plate. And it isn't even just the UFC. Like, this is a big issue. It's not just the UFC. But why don't you try and champion this? Why don't you try and really right your wrongs? And again, they tried it with Maurice Smith the next week, and people seem to, you know, be receptive to it. But in terms of booking fights, in terms of marketing fighters, like, they can definitely make some tweaks. And they seem to be trying, but again, they falter and some things end up tone deaf. But I'd like to see some more changes occur as the year plays out.
I agree. All right, Craig, let's move on to a new or kind of morphed or reformatted segment, Finish Strong. We're kind of taking the flurry and changing it up so we can end the podcast on a high note. All right, I'm going to throw some quick stuff at you. Just give me your initial thoughts. Corey Sonhagen says Petr Yan was served the belt on a silver platter. Your thoughts?
Kinda. Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. You know, like, Sandhagen did lose to Sterling, though, so if Yan beats Sterling, then upgrade the silver to platinum.
There you go. Up next, John Enick says the body, the bank account, and the family says you should hang him up to Amanda Nunes. What do you think?
Well, I considered that she might retire, so yeah. I mean, why not?
This one broke today, and we'll obviously get into this more probably next week on Early Stoppage. UFC signed a deal with DraftKings. What are your thoughts?
What about FanDuel? I mean, I think it's a good move in the right direction. You want to associate yourself and get a piece of the pie. They're already using, you know, the names and likenesses. So it's a good move in the UFC's part. I'm sure they get a decent cut out of it. And yeah, we'll have to see that how that one plays out.
And the next thing that I have to say about that particular subject is this. Immediately on social media, people are already saying, what percentage of this will go to fighters? It's a pretty big deal. It's like I think it's like $350 million over 5 years. So if they don't handle that well, then they're going to have another problem on their hands. All right, let's talk real quick before we get into some fights that were announced. PFL has announced they're going to conduct their season in a New Jersey bubble. What are your thoughts on that?
You like Dirt Nasty?
Love them. Who's that?
I'm on cocaine like it was 1980. You know that song? This just feels like a Dirt Nasty music video waiting to happen. Like, what, you know, New Jersey in a bubble? I think it's a good idea. I honestly think it's a really good idea. You know, you really want to take health and safety above all. And, you know, this weekend with the UFC's card, we have 15 fights. We've had 15 fights for the most part this week. We're coming between Thursday. The show hopefully comes out on Friday and nothing's really fallen out. But last week, you had a number of fights fall out. You ended up with a 9-fight card. So I think the PFL is really making a good proactive step in having a bubble like this. Hopefully it doesn't turn out like a Dirt Nasty music video. If you're not familiar with Simon Rex, go check him out. But I think it's a good idea in theory.
All right, let's get to the fights. Some stuff that was booked this week. Cub Swanson versus Giga Chikadze. What are your thoughts on that fight?
Big fan of Giga, and I think that's an awesome fight. That's a really good fight. If you like a striker's paradise, Giga Chikadze or whatever John said, and Cub Swanson, that's a good one.
And if you love that pronunciation, you're going to really, really be over the moon for this one. Scott Holtzman is fighting Matheus No, Gamrot?
Mateusz Gamrot.
There it
is. So Gamer Gamrot was the KSW champ. He came into the UFC, fought Guram Kutataladze. Guram won, but it was a fight of the night contender. It was an awesome fight. I think Mateusz runs through Scott Holtzman, but I think it's going to be a good fight. Like, you're going to enjoy it.
Carlos Felipe and Jake Collier, what do you got there?
Why do they keep bringing Jake Collier out here?
Here's the one that I need in my life, all right? But first, easy to pronounce. Second, a banger. Shane Burgos, Edson Barboza. What about this one?
Somebody's leg is going home, like, without the person.
And with that, this episode of Early Stoppage is in the books. Craig can be followed at Craig Allen FNP. I can be followed at SM Cornerman. The fight has been stopped. We'll see you next week. Craig, say something witty.
You got to check out Stomping Tom Connors if you made it this far.